Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And thank you for being here. Quick, just step through. We'll have you give your opening statement, and then if you've got a question, but we'll also then after that have questions from this body.
Okay.
And then when we've got about 5 minutes left in the 45-minute time slot that we've got here, you can give your closing statement as well. But again, thank you so much for being here. Do you have a question of us before we even get started?
No, I do realize I'm batting cleanup for the day.
Yes, you are.
And I'm hopeful I can keep everybody energized.
But I don't know if you got into the Hall of Fame yet today, because that was also today. Okay,
well,
floor is yours.
Great, thank you. You know, I am thrilled to be here, and it's an honor to be considered, and so I thank you for that at the very beginning. I want to tell you how excited I am at the prospect of joining the Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota, and to help you understand why I think I'm the right candidate for you. In many ways, this is a perfect role for me, and one that not only taps into my core strengths, but also fulfills some of my core aspirations. Let me tell you why, and I have 5 key points. First, I have significant experience in large organizations. I know my experiences leading complex organizations would help me function as a successful board member, asking the right sets of questions and challenging critical assumptions. At Best Buy, I directly managed a team of over 100 and was the team lead for the marketing function of over 400 people with an annual budget of over $500 million. I worked extensively with the senior management team at both Best Buy and at Honeywell. Across my career, I've counted this up. I've worked for 13 CEOs or presidents and have had a front row seat in large organizations for over 20 years. As the chief lobbyist for 2 Fortune 100 companies and as the policy director for one of the most influential trade associations in the state, I know how to move an agenda at the highest levels. I ran a $35 million foundation, managed both sides of the organization, both fundraising and strategic giving. I managed through significant structural changes. I was part of the merger team for both the Honeywell Allied Signal merger as well as the Honeywell GE merger. I have a strong understanding of change and how to make it happen and what derails it. And I've delivered results with a key eye on the bottom line. I understand the risks and the strengths of the adage, what gets measured gets managed. Second, I've got communication, public affairs, and strategic planning savvy. The U of M and the legacy opportunities it provides has a huge emotional appeal. That is the holy grail for a marketer. It is this critical juncture in the future of higher education, with funding more challenged than it's ever been, competition changing the playing field, and knowledge growing and morphing in unprecedented ways. We need to capture this emotional appeal and build an even stronger U of M. The U of M also has and will always have challenges to manage. Perennial challenges include the ongoing balance between depth and breadth, between access and affordability, and between traditional learning and new models. My strategic planning and critical thinking skills across many disciplines will help the board support the university well. I've spent my life telling compelling stories that get results. I know the limitations of a good story, and I will help the U develop the right strategy to support a great story. Third, I'm a committed volunteer and have strong governance credentials. Since I was 11 and my mother ran for city council in Sioux City, Iowa, my hometown, I've been enthralled with the process of governance. I cemented my reputation as a geek early on by taking the bus downtown every Monday after school to attend city council meetings. I tracked every issue and all the press coverage of it, and I was mesmerized by it. I've used that interest throughout my life as a volunteer leader in a number of organizations wherever I have lived. I literally have been an active volunteer leader since grade school. I know it is geeky. Here in Minnesota, I've served as a board member and executive committee member for the Boys and Girls Club for the Twin Cities for nearly 20 years and remain a trustee.
Hello,
sorry. Okay. I've served on the boards of the Humphrey School, the Normandale Community College, Scholarship America, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the United Way, and the Minnesota Orchestra. Most importantly, I know the process of board governance, the responsibilities of it, and the way to effectively steer but not manage an organization. Fourth, I have strong and proven ability to manage the intricacies, politics, of an organization and its relationships to other organizations. I've developed many coalitions, often of arch enemies, and have been able to keep them focused and moving towards a shared goal. I have a keen ability to read a room. I know how to develop a strategy. And I can navigate the choppy waters and build the kind of partnerships which provide results for the University of Minnesota. And fifth, and most importantly, I really love the product of the University of Minnesota. As sappy as it may seem, I love to be on a college campus and find the sense of opportunity intoxicating. The futures of individuals, the future of knowledge, and the future of society all in one place. The university has this wonderful cadence of new beginnings. Each year brings a new sense of hope with its empty grade book, its still perfect attendance record, and its even one loss record. There are few, if any, entities in the state with a more consequential role in securing a successful future for Minnesota than our world-class university. Its three-part mission of education, research, and outreach will help us educate tomorrow's leaders, solve some of the biggest challenges facing our planet, and address the unique needs of Minnesota. I have an extensive public and private sector background in both governance and senior leadership roles, and I want to contribute it to the university's governing board. I'd love to put this experience to use against such a great product. I hope these five key points provide some window into why I think I'm the right fit for you and why this potential role is so exciting to me. I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before that first question, I want to acknowledge Bud Nornes, representative here, said he wanted to sit in, and his schedule allowed this hour.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, very good.
For a short time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Harriet.
Hi. I'd like to capitalize a little bit on your communications and marketing background. And if I give you a scale with 1 being least and 10 being the highest, how strong is the university brand in your opinion? And then if it is not at a 10, and I don't want to make an assumption here, but if it is not at a 10, how would you use your background and experience within the realm of governance to get us to a 10?
I don't think it's quite a 10. In fact, I think it's closer to a 5, maybe. It's gotten stronger. You know, my brother went to the University of Minnesota, and when he's just a year younger than I am, and I was, I had no clue. I've spent every summer of my life in Minnesota, and you'd think I would know something about the university, and I knew nothing about the university. And, of course, that's a long time ago, so we'll think things have changed and improved. But even as I moved here to go to graduate school at the U, it was sort of like this constant peeling of an onion that just never ended, and there's just all this wealth that I think is not fully understood. Now, part of that is that it's so broad. The breadth is so great at the university that I think part of the challenge is to corral all of that into some meaningful points that you can sort of always come back to that helped to help make that case. I think the Driven to Discover campaign that's underway now has gone a long way to increase the understanding, and it's a really nice kind of platform from which you can go out and all those old fingers. But I don't think it's there. It's not the board's responsibility to tell the story, and I think the board tells the story by their interactions around the community, but it's not the board's job to develop that story, to move that story forward per se. I do think any successful story has to have the strength of its strategy behind it, and to me that's where the board plays the role here. I think I've had the luxury and the challenge of sitting through a lot of public corporation board meetings, and I've watched how the right sets of questions often move an agenda forward, even without having to be the manager or the person. And I think what I would add to the Board of Regents is that set of questions about how we're telling the story and how the strategy was playing out in that story.
A wonderful answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Paul.
You've talked about the brand. You've talked about teaching, research, and outreach, and now you've talked about the strategy. The Board of Regents approved a new strategic plan just last month in December. So at the Regent board level, how can you influence how the strategy grand challenges begin to support the brand and the threefold mission of the university?
I think that the every organization I've been a part of has had really great ups and really terrible downs. Some of them more down than others. And when it's going well, I can always point to the fact that the whole organization is focused. And I think that that's one of the ways strategies play out effectively is when you can get that tight focus in place. And every organization I've been in that has kind of lost its way for a while, that focus has waned. And that's been the reason it's sort of, you know, the flywheel has just gone astray. And so to me, what the board can do is really make sure that that strategy is focused and that we're clear about our intent, that the university is clear about its intent through that focus. And then I think that's the biggest way that the board can play that role.
Thank you.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. Just really appreciate you putting your name hat in the ring. And some friends and colleagues of yours have certainly written me wonderful things about you.
Well, so, good.
Yes.
Thank you.
So when you shared how you would impact this process by asking questions that could lead to a strategy that could result in a communications focus that could move the needle, mm-hmm. That's how I kind of heard what you said. I bet you have in your mind what that strategy, you know, would be based upon. So if you had a blank slate and you were putting forward a strategy that would result in the, you know, the needle going up with regard to the brand, what would be in that strategy?
Well, I think some of it would be a little like what's going on now with the Driven to Discover. I think that's done a nice job of that, of starting to coagulate all of the parts and pieces that are happening in the university and tell a consistent story about it. You know, one of the things I've discovered over my career is that you have all the formal ways that you tell the story, whether it's direct marketing or advertising or all the kinds of ways that, you know, a big consumer marketer can tell a story about something. And yet we never quite got over the hump of getting to really great until we made sure that everybody was telling a similar story at the same time. So to me it's a little bit about getting the campaign right, and then it's also getting everybody to buy into that campaign. And one of the things that I'm unclear about now, it may be happening and I just don't see it, but I don't see that it's that campaign has permeated all of the sorts of ways that the university might communicate with its various constituencies. You know, whether it's a patient in the hospitals or potential funder talking to somebody from the foundation, wherever that is, I don't know that it's consistent across those things. I don't know that it's not either, but that would be one of the things I would look for and one of the questions I would ask.
Just a follow-up, I'm sorry. But do you think Driven to Discover has the touch potential, really?
I don't think it's as emotional as I might want it to be.
Well, so that's what I'm asking, if you had a blank slate.
Yeah. I don't have the perfect solution for you right here today, but I do think that one of the things we always, you know, that's why I said it in my statement, one of the things you want if you're a marketer is that sort of emotional connection, and so few things. I mean, televisions can't get you very far on the emotional scale. They do for some people, but, you know, you don't have that in many things that I've been part of marketing, you know, HVAC controls, not there. But, you know, the university and all that set of opportunity that it represents, both for almost anybody in the state, we ought to take advantage of that.
Well, your opening statements actually did a little of that, the way you described the notebook and the great book.
Yeah, right.
The hope.
Yeah. Well, we're just trying to get some free marketing.
Exactly.
That's fine. I'll give it all day, every day.
What about we keep you warm? What about we keep you warm?
We keep you warm. Well, today that's an emotional response. I would agree.
Margaret.
You had one of the most successful high-profile careers at Best Buy. You were one of the leading female executives, leaders in the state. You're in a hiatus right now. So my question is really twofold. You could go anywhere in the country at a C-level position, CEO, Chief Information Officer, move out of the state, or you could go into a hugely big job in Minnesota. How do those relate to the time it's going to take to be a regent?
Well, thank you for that question. Actually, over on New Year's Eve, I received an offer for a position here in Minnesota as the first head of communications and public affairs for VARDE, which is a relatively large investment firm here in the Twin Cities with offices also in London and Singapore. And I'm very excited, and I accepted the offer. That offer negotiation included a conversation about the Board of Regents, and they were actually thrilled with that potential and interested in me doing that and interested in supporting me doing that. I've always been an active volunteer, as I already said. My intent is to spend a fair amount of to suspend most of my other volunteer work and to focus on the Board of Regents and to make that my key focus. I'm not leaving Minnesota. I want to stay in Minnesota. Fortunately, I'm going to be able to do that. I don't have children, which is a weird thing to say, I suppose, in this kind of an interview, but I don't have children, and my volunteer work has been incredibly important to me in terms of how it lets me think about the future. And that's one of the reasons this is such an important opportunity for me.
Okay, that was an answer to a great unknown as I went through your materials.
I understand that. It was unknown to me, too.
All right.
Thank you. Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paula, as I look at your resume or your application, I first of all, I'm impressed that you know how to digitally sign something. I don't think any of the rest of us. I'll leave to our State Arts Board member and chairman to ask you about your how your arts major in college would inform your role on the board. And I'm sure he's interested in that, as we are, and we think that's important. But my question would be this. We have had the benefit of interviewing 19 very competent and wonderful applicants, of which you are one. Five of them will become regents. How might you, should you not become a regent, continue your interest and contribution to the university, and would that be something that you would be willing to do in a non-regent capacity as well as?
Oh, sure. I've been a gopher since I got here, I guess I'd say, and I will continue to support the university in all sorts of ways that I possibly can. I'll continue to serve on the Humphrey Advisory Board without question, and I'll give free marketing advice when anybody asks. I'll see where it goes. You know, I'm not leaving the state, and I'm hopeful that at some point in my life I'll be able to serve as a regent, but I will continue to be a gopher and a supporting one until then, and even after then.
So. If I can just jump in, because he brought up the Minnesota State Arts Board, which I'm
sure.
on. There's a trend that humanities or the arts are not seen as important as they maybe used to be. Mm-hmm. They maybe don't create the big jobs and the salaries and all that. What role do you believe the humanities play in the education of all University of Minnesota students?
Well, to me, they're the they're not appreciated right now, and I would echo your concern about that, or at least what I assumed was a little bit of concern about that. I think they make for richer lives and for richer thought patterns. And, you know, people have asked me, and I'll tell you a funny story about my dad, but people have said, you know, how has an art major made sense to you? And for me, it's been, I'm a fairly big risk taker because of it, and I think exactly because of it. You know, you rarely know how anything's going to turn out, and getting just over the hump of worrying about it is a huge part of taking a risk, right? And so, our art—it's that's it in a nutshell in lots of ways. You know, when I was at Honeywell, I was blessed with wonderful parents who let me do a lot of things and let me play with a lot of opportunities and provided huge opportunities for me, and I will forever be grateful. My parents never once gave me any sort of inkling that. An art major might not have the best set of opportunities in front of it. And I never once got an ounce of anxiousness from them on it. And I was working at Honeywell and was asked to lead a delegation of congressmen and senators, U.S. congressmen and senators, through the Hermitage Museum, which was a really cool opportunity. And I was so excited to do it, and I was talking to my dad on the phone, and I told him about it, and he was quiet for a minute, and he said, "Huh, finally some use from that degree, art degree." I thought, oh, I never knew he was upset about that. Anyway, it was fun to have that little bit of use. But I think I use it every day, and I think anybody who's involved in the humanities uses it in all sorts of ways they might not even be able to articulate.
Thank you. Thank you. Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned at least one, I think two occasions, that you know how to move an agenda. Mm-hmm. I may have a two-part question, but the first part is, do you have an agenda?
Do I have an agenda for the university?
Yes.
Oh, I do. I think focus is critical, and I think the pressure on finances is never going to go away. We've got to get clear on what we're actually trying to accomplish and get focused on that and make sure that the strategies support that focus. Two, I do think the university needs to be known better, and I would that would be part of my agenda, even though I my role is limited as a board member, but I do think I'd ask the questions, and I do think I'd challenge some of the assumptions that have led us to this kind of quiet behavior that we have. And I think the third agenda item I have is that I want to see the university continue to grow, and that doesn't mean that it's going to grow in size or grow in budget or grow, just continue to move forward and take advantage of what's going on in the state of knowledge today. You know, you look at things like, I mean, the amount we know about the human brain today compared to what we knew 5 years ago is unbelievable. And that in and of itself is going to challenge the university to go new directions and new places. And I'm really excited about that, and I want to help take advantage of it. Those are my agenda items.
Don't need a second part.
Okay.
Okay. Kathy.
She has answered the question I was going to ask.
Okay. Pat.
Wow. Going back to education and various components of higher education, University of Minnesota, the Minsky system with 2- and 4-year colleges, and a very vibrant and strong private college liberal arts system in Minnesota. How do you envision those various players, those various pieces working together for our state, and what are their roles?
Well, I think I actually looked this up in the legislation, but I think it's pretty well spelled out there in terms of the interplay between particularly MNSCU and all the parts and pieces of MNSCU and the university in terms of supporting the both everything from the vocational education through the sort of degree programs, including baccalaureate degrees, but that the university will play that central research role and push on that lever extensively. But the two have to play together. You know, I've been really interested in watching California, where they are almost forcing freshmen to spend 2 years in a community college before they're even granted an opportunity to go into one of the state universities in California. I'm not advocating for that here. I don't think we probably have the challenge on space and resources the way they do. But it's a good example of how these systems need to work together. The private college piece is an interesting one. You know, I went to school in Massachusetts where it's completely flipped. You know, the private colleges far outweigh the public institutions. And I think Minnesota benefits from the fact that it isn't flipped here. We can count on the university to be that central place of research and that central place to sort of move the social agenda forward from which all the other institutions support.
Thank you. Sonia.
Paula, speaking of focus, your word, there's a growing sense at the university and among many of us that healthcare enhancing and strengthening the entire healthcare system at the university and all of its complexities is critical. Mm-hmm. You are a communications and public affairs specialist. You're not a healthcare specialist. What do you do if you became a regent to get on the learning path that makes you knowledgeable enough to really get your arms around what can be done, what must be done in order to engage and help create strategies to reach that goal or move toward that goal.
Well, it is a learning curve for me. You're right about that. And I typically, when I'm faced with those kinds of opportunities, spend a lot of time talking, listening, and reading. And those are, you know, my core strategies for getting there. You know, the state of Minnesota is an amazing place in terms of its healthcare resources and in terms of its, you know, we have some of the best care at some of the lowest costs of any place in the world, for that matter. And most of that, I think, we could attribute to the University of Minnesota and the medical school and its ability, its history of training really high-quality practitioners who've gone out and done great jobs at both providing service and care to individuals, but also creating interesting, compelling models of delivery and great clinics. And you know, it's across the board throughout Minnesota. It's not just at the university. I think one of the challenges for the university is how do you continue to partner and collaborate with all of those places and still establish an understanding that the university is that resource, that center resource that makes all of those places work. You know, the healthcare model of clinic-based care is, I think, going to become under challenge. Hospital-based care and clinic-based care will be a challenge in the future. And we're looking at much more at the need to manage populations than we are in just manage and just putting forth care. And I look at the university with its both its strong medical school and its strong school of public health, plus a bunch of other resources around it. We might be a leader in that we haven't even thought about yet. So I guess I don't know enough to tell you all the answers of what we ought to do now. I do know I've got the capacity to come up that learning curve pretty quickly, but never really leave the learning curve, because I think this is one where you just got to continually iterate your understanding of what's going on.
Thank you.
Lois.
Hello, Paula. Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Bullet number 3, continue to move forward and grow and strengthen cutting-edge fields. If we take that goal and mandatory obligation for our university and how we figure out to support it, that translates into the university being an economic driver if the university functions appropriately with that knowledge. Thinking about that economic driver capacity, how would you envision that knowledge and cutting-edge expertise being able to impact the economies of greater Minnesota, not just the metropolitan area?
Well, I think that we're at this interesting point where geography means so much and so little right now, because we have this ability to move information and move understanding and move interaction between people with a much, much greater ease than we've ever had in the past. And so I think that dichotomy we've always had in Minnesota between metropolitan area and outstate is continuing to dissolve to some degree, and yet we feel it even more than we have in the past. I don't know exactly which part of the economic engine would be driven by the university in terms of the which discipline we're talking about. It's hard for me to speculate on that, but when I think about, for example, I use the example of neuroscience in the brain. You know, I can't imagine that's not going to have an impact statewide in terms of our ability to capitalize on it, especially if we take the actions we need to take to make sure that we're understanding that and bringing all the resources to bear in the university to study that appropriately and to add the Minnesota dimension to that world's understanding. I don't know how that plays out on a geographic basis, but I can't imagine it wouldn't have an impact in all sorts of ways. You know, almost everything is starting to become
neuroscience and the law, neuroscience and this. I mean, it's all and. The whole world is an and. In fact, I just went to a commencement at my own alma mater, and I swear it took an hour longer because of all the ands, because everybody has five different majors. You know, nobody's a major of anything. You told me you're a math major. Are you a math major and
something? Yes.
Yes.
Like five times.
Five times. Okay, good. Well, this whole and concept is going to really allow this to take fingers in all different directions, and I can't imagine it won't have an impact across the state.
Mr. Chairman, if I might ask you following. You're accurate, and you talk about the criticalness of telling the story. There is so much story to tell at our university. The challenge, in my mind, is twofold, and that's making the story, telling the story, and then having the lives of citizens feel the story. And it's that third piece of feeling the story across the state that will really drive the strength of this state. And so I would encourage you, with your strength and capacity and synthesizing brain, to think about that if you have the privilege to serve as a regent.
Thank you.
Jerry.
Thank you. Actually, Sonia asked the question I was going to, but I have another. Going back to, I like to sort of pick out parts of your initial statement.
Sure.
One of the things you said, you love the product of the U. Mm-hmm. Describe what you think the product of the U might be.
Oh, I think, it's pretty broad. I use the words, it's education scholarship, it's research, and it's outreach in the broadest sense. I think that I love the everyday sort of classroom piece of the university, that sense that people are purposely coming together in the pursuit of some higher learning and thinking about where that learning will take their own lives. That's, to me, that's a core of any sort of academic institution. The thing that distinguishes the university is that it also adds that research and that outreach piece to it. So it's not only just that academic pursuit on the basic level, but also that knowledge pursuit on a little more macro scale, and then it's how does that get applied in all the ways that Lois was just talking about. To me, that's a pretty broad product. And so it's it may be one of the reasons we've had a harder time telling the story. I think part of the reason we've had a harder time telling the story is that we're Minnesotans or Northern European descent that tend to sort of not be very good about talking about ourselves. But it's a broad product, so it's hard to kind of narrow it down and put a series of explanations of how it might show up in a way that gets everybody emotionally engaged in it.
And Harriet.
We all have strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And we have heard about many, many, many of your strengths. So you know what's coming next. What do you consider to be something, an area that you really feel that you could improve? And then that's the first part of the question. The second part is, what would others say? How would others answer that question?
Others would say I can be rather intense at times, and that I, on occasion, am not as patient as I need to be. My husband would agree with everything I just said 10 times over. At Best Buy, we use this thing called the Strength Finders.
Yep.
I don't know if any of you are familiar with it. I thought it was hooey when I first heard about it, and then I've just fallen in love with it because it's just this it's a inventory you take, much like any number of them that you've taken, and you end up with your series of top five strengths. And what I loved about it is that we gave it to every employee in the company. I've never met anybody who wasn't just proud as punch of their own top five strengths. In fact, people would sign their name and they put their top five strengths underneath it. And, they were just happy as clams with it. And everybody had, what I loved about it, one of the things I loved about it, is that almost everybody's top strength is also one of their a contributor to their biggest weakness.
Absolutely.
And it's so easy to it was so nice to have a great conversation with somebody about their strengths and how they get them in trouble. My top strength is strategic. My fourth strength is achiever. And that's a lethal combination sometimes for me, because if I don't think something strategic, I just don't want to spend any time on it. You know, my achiever just takes over and says, ah, forget it. And there's a lot in life that you got to just do, and that's where I get in trouble. I don't know if that's a good enough answer for you.
Yes, we share those two.
Do we? Okay, cool.
And we can talk about this afterward, but I took
it. Have you found the strategy to deal with it?
I took it to StrengthsFinder for the first time at Best Buy.
Did you? Wow, I didn't know that. Cool. Was it a good experience there?
Well, you know, this is a conversation for later. It's not my favorite instrument, but it has its purpose.
Yeah, it does.
Very good. Margaret.
My question perfectly leads into the last question. Anybody who tells me they've worked with 13 CEOs, you deserve a medal for that. We won't give you one going out, but you do. What have you learned from watching them that you've emulated, that you like very much, and what have you said, oh my gosh, I share some of those same characteristics. I'm going to make sure that I temper this.
Well, the one thing I will tell you, having worked with that number of CEOs or presidents, is that every leader has its time, has his or her time, when their leadership is really important and helpful. And they're not identical by any means. You know, I was mesmerized watching Dick Schultz at Best Buy, who founded that company, who, you know, until the day he dies will know where every penny in that company is and is going. You know, he's just that's his brain and that's how he works. And yet he personally chose a successor who's about as opposite as you can get to him, in Brad Anderson. And Brad Anderson was every bit as kind of free-flowing and wild as, wild's the wrong word, but sort of innovative and loving of ideas as Dick was tight and controlled. And yet they both played an important role in that company's history. And it's interesting to watch those changes. I worked for a president of the president of Wheaton College, Tish Emerson, who was just a delightful person, but very sometimes too intense and too rigid. And I've taken away from that I need to be careful about doing that. In fact, one day I walked in. I was standing outside the president's office, and we'd had a longtime CFO of the college, and he'd retired. And we had a new person in the role. And Tish was just she could be really tough. And all of a sudden the door flew open and she said, ah, Polly's, she yelled at her assistant, he's down again. And this CFO had fainted for the second time in a meeting with her because she was so tough. I took that home and said, I'm not going to be like that.
But, we won't share this with Taylor.
But she could be tough, and she had an effect on people, and wasn't always as positive she wanted it to be. You know, I've learned a lot from a lot of different leaders, and the biggest thing I've learned is you've got to know when your time is and what your contribution is to that time.
Any other questions? If not, this has been a very enjoyable interview from a geeky person. So yeah. appreciate that very much. Your closing statement.
I don't have much of a closing statement. I'll reiterate what I said earlier, which is I think this is a really huge opportunity for me. I think I bring a number of different skills and experiences to the table that I think could be very helpful to the university and to the Board of Regents. As I said at the closing of my opening statement, you know, I don't think there is a more important institution in the state.
and I don't mean to take away from the legislature or from any other institutions, but I do think the university just plays this wonderful and unique role. This university has so much going for it, and it has so much potential to it. And it's rare that you can say those two things together. I would love to be able to help focus that strategy and move the agenda forward.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.